Just imagine, the mightiest heroes of our time.
All of them.
Chosen from among all others by the immortal elders Solomon, Hercules, Atlas, Zeus, Achilles, Mercury, Billy Batson and his mentor travel the highways and byways of the land on a never-ending mission to right wrongs, to develop understanding, and to seek justice for all. In time of dire need, young Billy has been granted the power by the immortals to summon awesome forces at the utterance of a single word.
Shazam!
A word which transforms him in a flash into the mightiest of mortal beings, Captain Marvel!
Hello and welcome to JLU Cast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, Cindy Franklin.
And I'm Chris Franklin, and we're back with Season 2, Episode 7, Clash. This episode features the one and only appearance of one of comics' most famous characters, the original Captain Marvel, or as some of you may know him, Shazam! We're joined this time by a fan of the Big Red Cheese who gets his powers with two magic words, plaid stallions. He's a YouTuber, an author, a magazine publisher, a toy maker, and an all-around nice guy. Please welcome the man behind Plaid Stallions, Toy Ventures Magazine, and so many other wonderful projects, our friend, Mr. Brian Heiler. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me, and thanks for the nice intro. I was worried about what magic words you were going to use because, well, my kids know that I have other magic words I use a lot.
Yeah, I use those magic words too, and in fact, here lately, I've used even more of them. So it's like,
yeah, know, so. Yeah, I've just kind of live and swear. in fact, some of my magazine, like, I hope no one ever has to go through my files because, oftentimes, you know, late at night, you're clipping stuff, and you start to use like curse words as your file saving names. So, you know, I dread ever having to say, okay, look for the file named, you know, beep.
So when the Toy Ventures, archive edition comes out, then we're
full of swears.
Yeah, full of swears. Okay. That it's going to be a black label book, you know, not on the shelf, up in a bookstore, a pie, you know, so nobody can get to it.
It's a little blue towards the end. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So we were talking about, like, I asked you, like, you know, what episode would you like to talk about? And you mentioned this one. So I'm guessing you're a fan of...
I completely forgot when we did this.
I don't either.
But I know I did it.
Yeah. I did too. I don't know. It's been a long time ago. So are you a fan of Captain Marvel?
Huge, yeah. And it's all due to the Filmation series, the live action.
Right.
I remember as a kid, like, they used to play the George Reeves Supermans, and I liked them, but they looked dated. Like, Lois looked like my grandma, and the flying always just kind of looked like he was lying down on a board. And while Captain Marvel, like, while the Filmation Shazam's effects weren't much better, I think it was just that it was kind of more modern and kind of this big explosion of color. I've always loved Jackson Bostwick's outfit. Mm-hmm. And that left an indelible impression on me. And I became a huge fan of the comics as a kid too, because if I recall correctly, just towards the end of the run, which is when I started to read, they had kind of amped up the comics from being less like C.C. Beck and more trying to be its own thing. And they were kind of basing it off the TV show, but not really. They were still embracing all the family members you didn't see on the show. And I remember really thinking it was a fun, like, the fun shone through in that comic.
Mm-hmm. They had Uncle Dudley kind of fill in for Mentor, and they went in an RV across the country and in the comics. Yeah. So I
think Billy grew his hair a little long. Yeah. You know, like, they tried to, yeah.
And Don Newton started drawing the comics, and they definitely changed it a little bit to match the show. Yeah. I know you said Jackson Bostwick, so I'm guessing you're more of a Jackson Bostwick man than a John Davey man.
Oh, I like John Davey ones too. It's just that I think they had the perfect guy in Bostwick. And John Davey, he looks like an older prize fighter. Like not a guy I'd mess with, but he was a little more middle-aged. And I don't know. There's nothing. They're not. I don't consider his episodes train wrecks or anything, but the Jackson Bostwick's Captain Marvel imprinted on me, I guess is the word I'd use.
I feel the same way. I'm guessing you had the 8-inch Mego figure of Captain Marvel.
I did not.
Really?
The only time I ever ran into a Shazam, which is what I probably would have called it as a kid, was the same time that I ran into like Green Arrow and Aquaman and Iron Man and all these characters I hadn't had before. And it became this terrible, what do I do conundrum. And I went home with Iron Man, but I remember Captain Marvel was like, it was down to those two. Because I think even at the time, they were rerunning the Shazam show again. Like, remember in the late 70s, they reran it?
I think that's when I watched it.
So that was tough. And, no regrets because I really liked the Iron Man, but he's one of my favorite Migos now. And I have him in the box, and I don't have him on the Kresge card because that's impossible and insane. So I have a boxed one. That's about it. And I have the Mexican one. So
Oh, okay,
yeah,
cool.
he's a favorite.
Yeah, he is a really nice figure. It's kind of odd because your dilemma was kind of similar to mine with the superpowers, Shazam slash Captain Marvel, and I saw him and I saw Cyborg, and I'm like, I only have money for one, and I. And, I'm like 10 years old, 10, 11 years old, and I'm like, okay, I like Cyborg, but Captain Marvel is more historically important, and I've liked him longer, so I'm going to buy Captain Marvel. And then, of course, now Cyborg, I can't touch for less than $1,000. So,
Wah, wah. What's really interesting about Cyborg too was like I was already collecting at that time, and he was hot then. Like not just not with kids, but with like adults, and that's never really gone away.
No, that's why I never got one. I still don't have a cyborg. I've never been able to afford him.
Yeah, no, I don't have like I don't collect superpowers, but yeah, I love the Captain Marvel one. But yeah, that one I could never afford.
Same. So we were talking about the Filmation, and this is the JLU episode's actually Captain Marvel's second animated appearance, and the first one was in Filmation's follow-up Shazam series, the Kid Superpower Hour with Shazam. So did you watch that show when it was new?
I did. Now, I think I was probably going on 11 when that came out, maybe 12. I can't. When did it come out? 82?
81, 82, I think, yeah.
81, 82. Okay, so I was 10, going on 11. I watched it. The tonal shift of the going to more of a CC Beck style storytelling was a bit of a shock as a kid because I wasn't really all that familiar with that iteration of the character. But I liked it. I especially liked the live action segments on that show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had a bit of a fondness for the dirty Trixie character as a young boy.
I got you. Cindy's just sitting here shaking her head. Hey,
and
she
it
was
was,
a cute
yeah.
brunette.
She was very pretty, and I was not sure what my motives were because I was like 10. But, and I also really early on recognized that like they had just taken the Archies and made them into superheroes, but weren't paying anybody. Like it was really obvious who was who. And I found out later, like years and years later, that that was actually the plan. It was supposed to be an Archies. The Super Archies or something like that. And it didn't happen because of a licensing issue. So yeah, they did exactly that. They just kind of made their own Archies.
It's like when you figure out that Scooby-Doo was like really supposed to be a Dobie Gillis animated series with a dog added in, and it's like, oh, of course, that makes perfect sense now, you know. So.
It would if I'd ever actually seen an episode of Dobie Gillis. I don't think it ever aired around here, and if it did, I never caught it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, like I do call my son Mater G. Krebs a lot, but neither of us truly get the reference. So.
Just shorthand for beatnik, I guess, right?
Yeah. Hippie beatnik. You know, shave that beard. You know. It's definitely that definitely had an impact on me as well. The Captain Marvel love is high in my household.
That's cool. That's cool. I like that series because it did feature the whole family. You know, it got to see Junior and Mary and Uncle Dudley, and yeah, it was cool.
And I believe we got, you know, our first animated appearance of Sabacc, right? In that,
right?
So yeah. You know, the tremendous star of the blockbuster film Black Adam that we've all seen 10 times,
right? And Black Adam was on there too, and that was like before mm-hmm. Black Adam was a big deal. He was just
and it was a pretty good it was a yeah at that point I remember too, like I thought Black Adam was really cool and underused. Be careful what you wish for. But yeah, they did a pretty good job of the retelling of his origin too, because I've read that origin a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And I think they just have him like land. Like, you know, like Shazam pushed him really far away, and then he had to come back.
Right. He's been traveling all these millennia. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. What about you, Cindy? Were you did you watch any of the Shazam TV show when you were a kid? Or?
Honey, I was lucky to get 3 channels. No. I lived out in Bufu.
I just didn't remember. I mean, we've been together so long, I didn't know like what your relation to Captain. No, not the live action or the animated.
No.
Oh wow, that's sad. I'm sorry. So you had to wait till we started dating before you started reading the Jerry Ordway.
Yeah, I think that's all been taken care of now. I'm sure she's had plenty of exposure to those programs.
She's up to speed. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were talking about the animated series, and actually Paul Dini, who went on to work in the animated universe a lot, he actually worked on the Filmation animated Shazam, and I think Bruce Timm may have worked a little bit on it as well.
Yeah, I can't remember if Paul Dini or Bruce Timm, who I think it was Paul Dini, said his time at Filmation was a lot like Conan pushing that big wheel.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, he wrote a lot of He-Man. He wrote some Shazam, you know. It's yeah. So what's your history with the DC animated universe? Did you follow it pretty closely when it was airing from Batman on, or did you drop in?
I was Batman the animated series premiered when I was in college, and I was not alone usually watching that during the day. Like, you know, I was able to make it for 4 o'clock every day somehow. And I think I even taped it, and that was like a religious thing because we just didn't get shows that good ever. And I think that was the same year the X-Men cartoon premiered, which I wasn't like, I still don't really like the X-Men comics, but back then you came out if they made it, you know what I mean?
Right.
You supported it because there was so little going on that you were like, sure, you know, like they could have made, I don't know, they could have made an animated series based on the Mighty Crusaders, and I've watched I would have watched every episode, but I'm just trying to say, like, it really didn't matter. You just wanted to see superhero content.
Right.
And, but this was just a gold standard to me. Superman excited me, the show. I thought that was great. And then the idea of a Justice League just blew my mind. You know, having a Justice League television series, I never expected that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it. I didn't either at the time because it seemed like they were really hesitant to do it, you know, for a long time.
Yeah, they were going back and forth with it. I remember that. And then they chose Batman Beyond instead of doing a Justice League show, which bummed me out fiercely. I just thought that was a bad idea. And I like Batman Beyond, but I just thought it was kind of... we already have a Batman at home, you know?
Right. That's right. Yeah, good call. Yeah, I think that was kind of foisted upon them. It was like, either we do it or WB does it without us, so let's do it, you know. So,
and nobody wants that.
No. It's hard to tell what we would have gotten, you know. Oh,
yeah. Oof. What's that Avengers show that Fox Kids did?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
That's bad. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Stinks on ice. Yeah, and it's just like, there's no creator involved with this, and you can tell,
right?
You know, like, there's no love. It's just committees and executives,
right? Yeah, yeah. But we got a toy line to put out. Let's make a cartoon.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Well, let's get into some details on a really good episode of an animated series, and that's
absolutely
that's Clash. Originally aired June 11th, 2005. The story was by Dwayne McDuffie, with teleplay by JMD Mateus, so you know it's good. Directed by Dan Ribba. Music by Christopher Carter. In the cast, we had George Newbern as Superman, Kevin Conroy as Batman, Carl Lumley as John Jones, Jerry O'Connell as Captain Marvel, Shane Habaucha as Billy Batson, Clancy Brown as Lex Luthor, Dana Delaney as Lois Lane.
Dana Delaney, I'm sorry.
That's right. Can't help it. I knew you were going to do that. Wag your eyebrows when you do that. Robert Foxworth as Hamilton, as Professor Hamilton, John C. McGinley as the Atom, Lisa Edelston as Mercy Graves, and Jeremy Piven as the Elongated Man.
When the League is up against the Parasite, this looks like a job for Superman, but another superpowered hero steals his thunder when new League recruit Captain Marvel arrives to save the day. His first meeting with the visibly put out Man of Steel is a bit awkward.
The press stop Captain Marvel and ask him how he feels about being in the Justice League. The captain tells them how the League is changing the world. Even former supervillain Lex Luthor is running for president. Captain Marvel flies off and returns to Fawcett City, and his life is young Billy Batson. Later, he's in awe of the Watchtower when Superman calls him into a meeting of the League's founders. The Daily Planet has published the headline, Captain Marvel endorses Lex Luthor for president. Superman reads him the riot act about representing the team and not backing any political figures, especially supervillains. The captain posits that maybe Luthor has really changed, but Superman isn't buying it.
Lex appears on TV promoting the charity event unveiling of his new Lexor City, designed for lower-income families. Later, Professor Emil Hamilton alerts Superman and Batman to the theft of a large amount of kryptonite from Star Labs. When signs point to LexCorp tech used in the theft, Superman immediately blames Lex, but Batman isn't sure. Superman attends the charity event to keep an eye on Luthor, but Billy Batson is in attendance as well. Superman overhears Lex and his assistant, Mercy Graves, talking about a device with a countdown, and he assumes that there's a bomb in Lexor City. He finds a suspicious, lead-encased device below the playground area. Lex tries to get him to stop, claiming it's a fusion generator created to give the city free energy. But Superman begins tearing through the ground. Captain Marvel steps in, and Superman tosses him aside.
The two powerhouses engage in a prolonged battle that literally levels all of the thankfully empty Lexor City. Superman eventually makes it down to the work tunnels below, but Captain Marvel grabs him and, saying his magic word, Shazam, repeatedly, shocks Superman with his magic lightning. Superman recoups and quickly grabs Marvel, and the lightning reverts him back to Billy Batson. He gags Billy and melts the device with his heat vision with seconds to spare.
Afterwards, the Atom confirms that the device looks to be what Lex claimed it was, a fusion generator. The Man of Steel apologizes before the press, but Lex says that he's to blame for trying to keep the free energy a surprise. When Superman offers for the League to pay for the damages, Lex says this one's on him. On the Watchtower, Captain Marvel calls a meeting with the Founding Leaguers. He tells them all how he looked up to them and idolized Superman, but no more. He's quitting the League because they don't believe in fair play and giving people the benefit of the doubt. To him, they don't act like heroes anymore.
He leaves and Superman admits that he's right. But Batman counters, they set Superman up. Elsewhere, the they in question are celebrating their victory as Lex toasts the success of their plan with Amanda Waller. So we start out the episode with Elongated Man. He's knocked out, stretched all over, metamorphosed, fighting Parasite. And Parasite uses Ralph's stretching abilities in the fight. And then he drains Metamorpho's powers, and it it seems like it's really painful. Mm-hmm. I mean, like it's killing him. It's like, wow, that's it's pretty.
That's a Justice League like staple, though. That you know, the character reacting to intense pain. They especially do that a lot with Superman.
Yeah. Hence our electricity is evil gag in every episode because, you know, Superman. Yeah, Rob Kelly has joked that George Newbern's most frequent line in Justice League was, you know, because he's...
Yeah, we just went through the first two seasons because they came up on Netflix. And, you forget how you got to walk before you can run. And... I view Justice League Unlimited as the show running.
Right.
Whereas, you know, I find the earlier seasons kind of like, it's walking, it's building its universe. But the opening scene is so great because it's an amazing, you know, fight between characters that will not get a whole episode. And, you know, even though it's a plot device, it's a wonderful, colorful plot device.
Yeah.
With no origins and no, you know, just, and the stakes are small, but it's just a perfect opening for this kind of show. And that's what we kind of, why I kind of think it appeals to me more.
Yeah. It's like, it's just media res. You're dropped in. There's a battle with a villain. And if you watch Superman, the animated series, you know who Parasite is. If you didn't, it doesn't really matter. You pick up what his powers are and it's really, yeah, it's a really great doorway in. We see Metamorpho. He doesn't speak, so it's not Tom Sizemore returning from Justice League, unfortunately. But you know, but it's nice to see him. And every time I see him, I get that, you know, old record theme song stuck in my head. So
great. Now I've got the Plastic Man one in my head.
I don't know what's worse, Metamorpho, or Plastic Man. You know, I don't know which.
It's Plastic Man for me, anyway. It's just that belt that's a beaut, like.
Who wrote that? That? Yeah,
I think they've been found and killed.
Well, there.
Then Batman appears. He gets a nice intro. We get the classic BTAS theme, which is always cool. This is the first time we've seen Batman since the end of Doomsday Sanction, where he was laid up in bed with a neck brace, and he was pondering his allegiance to the Justice League, which, of course, we've learned since that Tim and company were really thinking about him switching sides, but thankfully they didn't do that. So Batman actually realizes he's out of his league and calls Jean and says, "We're in trouble." And I love it. Jean says, "Are you asking for help? You never ask for help." I mean...
Yeah,
that's a nice bit. Here we don't care for infallible Bat God, and I'm expecting you to not. I'm guessing you don't care for it either, Brian.
What's that, infallible Bat God? No, I don't care for that. I think Batman is an amazing character that can get a little too Deus Ex Machina, and I like this version of Batman because at times he's quite humble and at other times he's humbled. And that is more realistic to me than to have him be this genius who knows everything.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Superman gets a great intro. We get the Superman animated series theme. He's saving a crashing plane in Metropolis because it's Tuesday, probably, you know.
The air death capital of the world.
Yeah, Superman should have had a little caveat when he said, statistically speaking, it's still the safest way to travel, except in this city. You know,
yeah, in this city, which is why I'm here.
That's right. This is just a year before the great plane rescue scene in Superman Returns. You know, so. That's a very. I mean. That movie, I know people have mixed feelings about it, but that scene's really great. So,
it is the high point of the film, actually.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Superman tells Jean he'll be there in a minute, and then a red blur flies by him, and it blows his cape over his head. And this is the first indication we get that Superman's going to be pretty pissy. He looks pissed in this episode. You know, you don't tug on Superman's cape and you don't blow it over his face either, you know, and she fly by. So
This to me is a really another reason that I enjoy this episode is that we've also got a fallible Superman here.
This is not, you know, Mark Waid saying, "Oh, Superman's always got to be right." No, Superman's makes some big mistakes in this one.
He makes boo-boos.
So Captain Marvel is literally wrapping up the parasite in a bow when we cut back to the fight scene with the street lamp. So his design is pretty classic. What do you guys think? What do you think of it,
Oh, it's
Cindy?
a good take on it.
What about you, Brian?
It looks like it's similar to what like Jerry Ordway was it Jerry Ordway was doing that in the 90s, like kind of taking him back to his roots with more of a jacket and pants, which because I think he was supposed to be like based on a theater usher, if I recall. And yeah, you can't go wrong with a classic look. You know, the little golden age, but that works for the character. I like that a lot.
It's a really sharp design. They left out the little whatever the little rope braids are on his cape, but I always thought they were flowers when I was
a kid. The epaulets. Me too. In fact, my mom had like a flowered towel, like a 70s hippie daisy towel, that was kind of orange and white, and I used to use that as my Captain Marvel cape.
Oh, there you go.
That's cool.
Oh, little Brian.
I still would if it existed. But no, it no longer is around.
Batman actually congratulates Captain Marvel, and Ralph notes, "Hey, I think he's blushing," and he's got, I like that little animate, the little red on his cheeks.
In terms of a voice actor, they really chose right. Because you know, in a different time, I think that the actor could have been Shazam or Captain Marvel in a film.
Jerry O'Connell. He would have been great as Captain Marvel. I had that in my notes too. And I of course people know him from Stand By Me and Sliders and but I would always think back to My Secret Identity.
You guys get that?
Yeah.
I thought we're the only ones who got that.
Nope.
That was like filmed here.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah, like a lot of those
Yeah.
shows were, yeah, the syndicated.
Yeah, that had Derek McGrath in it, and Derek McGrath did a like he was really known for children's television in the 1970s here. He did a lot of stuff on TVO. And then he kind of had a brief Hollywood career where he's like on Cheers, and then he came back to Toronto and filmed My Secret Identity. I don't know where it happened to him. He was a really good actor.
I liked him on there too, you know, and I know on Cheers, we've got Cheers cast on the network. Our friend Ryan hosts, and he plays the recurring kind of psychotic character.
Andy.
Exactly.
And that was a trip seeing him on Cheers because it's like, hey, that's Darren McGrath, you know. And there's a lot of Canadian actors, they don't really turn down work, right? So they're jobbing, and so they would do a ton of commercials as well here. So he was like a very recognizable face in Canada.
Jerry O'Connell is it I know he's done a lot of other work, and in fact, Cindy and I have started binging Lower Decks, Star Trek Lower Decks, and he's
Oh
got
yeah.
Commander Ransom on there. We've been hearing his voice a lot because we've been watching that, and
Yeah.
we watched Clash in between. So I've always liked him when he shows up at something. I'm like, oh, he's one of those actors that, you know, I think he's always good, and he brings an energy to everything he does. He seems like he's into what he's doing, you know.
I always kind of got that too. And yep, that was for me. Not that JL, like, I find Andrea Romano's voice casting is usually pretty damn good. She really does get the best people for the job, obviously, especially in, you know, terms of, like, she hired Kevin Conroy to play Batman. In this case, yeah, top notch. You know, bang on. Couldn't do better.
And I love, you know, they introduced Superman to him because Superman was on an away mission when they, you know, brought him into the league, and he introduces himself as, "I'm Captain Marvel, sir, and it's an honor. You're my biggest fan."
Yeah. not quite Zachary Levi, but just enough to kind of, you know, give the character a little bit of a childish charm.
Yeah, and George Newbern's Superman just ain't having it today. He's like, excuse me? Just,
I mean, he's yeah. I don't know. He came in and he was pissy.
Yeah, I mean, he really was. Yeah. He was having a bad day from the get-go, you know.
Yeah, he's in a mood. Yeah. And
his testosterone is off. Say what you will about women. It's men that cycle, man.
I can't deny that, you know.
At least we're on a monthly cycle. You boys are on a daily.
Ugh. Oh, now.
I'm serious. Yeah,
I
got to
be honest with you. If this was switched, you'd have one of if this was gender swapped, so like Supergirl versus Mary Marvel, one of the characters would have gone, "Oh, meow." You know.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You're right.
So there is a bold double standard going on.
Uh-huh, which is where I come in.
Yeah. I feel like this episode's definitely sliding into the real-world rivalry between Captain Marvel and Superman. I mean, you know, the whole legality. We won't get into it, but everybody knows that Captain Marvel was originally published by Fawcett. DC sued Fawcett for, you know, that he's too close to Superman. The battle went on for years, and they finally just gave up and said, we won't publish him anymore. And then, you know, about 20 years later, someone at DC said, hey, I think it was Carmine Infantino, said, hey, let's publish Captain Marvel. And that's how DC ended up. And they had to call him, well, they had to call the book Shazam because Marvel had copyrighted it. And now they just gave up and called the character Shazam. And all our toys said Shazam on it, right? So, you know.
And I don't think it's actually, I don't think Marvel was reacting to Fawcett so much as I think there was a guy, and I can't remember his name, but he produced a Captain Marvel comic in the 60s.
Yeah, the Split guy.
I have them because I really like terrible comics, and they are just, they're just awful. Like but I believe that this guy got sued back to the Stone Age because he had characters named the Bat and Dr. Fate and I think even Plastic Man. I think he was even jumping on that IP, and I think he got sued to the Stone Age, and after that came out, that forced the creation of Marvel's Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Because they were like, hey, we got to jump on this.
Yes. And
yeah. So it's a weird twisted tale, basically.
I actually got to draw that version of Captain Marvel. AC Comics put him in their Femme Force books, and I drew one issue of Femme Force. So I got to draw that split Captain Marvel. His head's flying around, and his arms are flying around. And so I think they called him something else. Yeah, I think they called him something else, but
I hope so.
Yeah, but he was that character. He had the same costume and everything. So, yeah. After the break, the reporters swarm and call out to Captain Marvel. And now he stops while the other leaguers walk on. So I get the idea that the reporters know the other heroes probably won't have much to say to him, even Superman, even though Lois is there. Mm-hmm. So, like we said, Dana Delaney returns as Lois again. And we've seen her a few times on Justice League, but this is her first appearance on JLU. Aren't you a Dana Delaney fan, Brian? Am I right about that?
You are absolutely correct. Yes. Since China Beach.
Yep.
There's just something about her. She's just a lovely woman, and I think she is the best Lois Lane.
Yeah.
Going. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Yeah, I've always liked her as well, and you know, I mean, not just because I think she's very attractive, but because her personality comes through in every role she plays, that she's just got this very likable energy about her or something, you know. Yeah, and the Animaniacs thing, as Cindy pointed out.
The Animaniacs thing?
Yeah, well, that's what she was doing, like, Animaniac, totally insane-y, Dana Delaney.
Oh. Wow, I haven't heard that in forever. Oh, my God. I haven't watched Animaniacs in a while.
Well, we haven't either, but it's one of those things that stuck with us. Whenever her name comes up, me and Cindy look at each other and go, Dana Delaney. Yes. Yeah, so.
I totally get that. Yeah. Yeah. It's my wife always says John Saxon. Because she loves the phonetics of his name.
Yeah. Saxon, sax off, you know.
John Saxon.
Just yeah. Saxon. Yeah. So Lois asks how he feels. It feels for him to be on the league, and he says being on a team with Superman, Batman, or Wonder Woman. He says I can't believe they let me join, which I kind of wonder if it's a little nod to the fact that he's from outside DC, you know. So I thought that was kind of fun. Yeah. Then Lois asks him what he values about the league, and he tells him, you know, because they help people and change the world, and she asks him to be specific. And that's when the crap hits the fan, and he says, well, just look at Lex Luthor. He used to be a supervillain, for Pete's sake, and now he's one of the good guys. I think it's terrific that he's running for president, don't you?
Oy.
Oy.
Yeah. Oopsie. That is actually more relevant now than it was then.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's a really forward-thinking in the episode. Yeah, that is a... And boy, if you thought Superman was grumpy for earlier.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and you can tell he's not used to having all of these reporters around him, because anybody that has ever talked to a swarm of reporters, you do, okay, this one, this one, this one. You don't let somebody ask you four questions, just boom, 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 boom.
Right.
So they can't build a whole story. You're giving each one a soundbite. So they can't do a cohesive thing.
Right. Yeah, and
that's
and,
politics.
Yeah, Lois is. You know, she. I like her response. Is like,
I gotta write that down. I didn't know that.
Next time you're hit with, you know, some questions about the next issue of Toy Ventures, you'll know how to respond.
Oh yeah, yeah, or some scandal at the Meeker Museum.
There you go.
No comment.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, no, you don't ever say no comment. You say, that is an interesting question. Let me take this question from him, and if I have time, I'll come back to you. You don't come back.
You don't come back, yeah. Oddly
you never
enough,
say no comment.
The world connotations that you brought up Zachary Levi, he said some things which didn't go over too well right before Shazam Fury of the Gods came out, too. So it's kind of ironic.
Yeah.
So I'm sure the Warner Brothers felt a lot like the Justice League did in this episode. Keep your mouth shut. Run it by us before you say anything.
Yeah, but I don't think he got like sent to a room where an angry Henry Cavill yelled at him.
No. If they hadn't fired Henry Cavill, maybe, you know, they would have.
Oh, yeah.
I love him as Superman.
I don't know. Well, we won't get into that. We've got to move on. Captain Marvel flies back to Fawcett City, and it's a very quaint, old school town. The town square even kind of looks like the town from Back to the Future, I think. So that's
probably intentional.
Hill Valley, a little bit. Yeah. Of course, Fawcett City is a nod to Captain Marvel's original publisher. And I think DC started using that as the name of Captain Marvel's previously unnamed home in the 1980s. They decided that was the name of his town. It wasn't Philadelphia like it is in the film. So, and he's got a very retro theme song, too, which fits. And he stops at Billy's school, which is the C.C. Bender Elementary School, named after Captain Marvel's co-creator, C.C. Beck, as you pointed out, Brian, and one of his primary Golden Age writers, Otto Bender, looks like Binder, pronounced as Bender, I believe, who went on to write a lot of Superman stories and co-create Supergirl. So,
yeah, did he not also write those Captain Marvel split comics? I feel like he did.
I think, yeah, I know him and I think him and C.C. Beck did. Did they do like that Fat Man book where the guy dressed like Captain Marvel?
Oh, yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. Fat Man, the Human Flying Saucer.
Yeah, he was dressed in green, like a green Captain Marvel suit, and kind of looks like the modern, you know, lieutenant or the family member. I can't think of the character's name. That's the Latino kid, right? That's the in the green in the movies. He looked like that costume, but he turns into a flying saucer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this character does,
and it's essentially just the green Marvel suit. You're right.
Right. Yeah. Of course, Billy says Shazam, or Captain Marvel says Shazam, turns into Billy. He's a very classic looking C.C. Beck, Billy Batson. with the little little eyes and little dots for his eyes, and so it's fun. Billy gets late to class, and his teacher gives him some grief about it, and she's talking about Roosevelt and Hitler in 1939, which is a nice nod to the year that Captain Marvel was first published. So that's a nice little lot of little Easter eggs through here and there. So we cut to the Watchtower, and Captain Marvel's taking in all the wonders, hanging out in space, and the music by Christopher Carter really sells that this is, you know, he's in awe of everything he sees. This, of course, show always has beautiful music, and he passes a lot of characters in the hallway, like Sand and Wildcat and Stargirl. And in the JSA comic in the early 2000s, him and Stargirl kind of flirted, which the Flash didn't, Jay Garrick didn't realize that Billy was a kid, and it created some issues.
Oh, well, yeah, so they really created a little, like, that conundrum. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of an interesting story. Basically, Flash took him to the side and say, "Hey, cut it out, you creep." And he's like, "Hey,
just a kid, you pervert."
Yeah, exactly. he high-fives Captain Atom, another captain brought in from another publisher. Charlton, yeah. Then he strikes up a conversation with our favorites here, Vigilante and Shining Knight.
Yep.
And then he gets called into the office by Superman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for a spanking. Yeah. Supes is coming off as, no fun, you know?
Yeah.
A real Herbert, as they would say in Star Trek.
Yeah. He you know, calls it in front of all the original Seven Leaguers. He asks him if he's read the paper, and he tells him just the comics. And then Superman shows him the headline that reads, "Captain Marvel endorses Luthor for president." And his response, of course, is, "Holy moly," you know, which I thought was nice. Now, I want to ask you guys.
A little typical.
Yeah, a little typical, yeah. I want to ask you guys, at no time did Captain Marvel actually endorse Luthor. And I want to know, who wrote this headline? Was it Lois? Was it Perry White? And don't we expect better from them than what is essentially fake news?
Right.
This is the Daily Planet, not the Daily Bugle.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Or whatever Metropolis' other paper that probably has Heathcliff and Marmaduke in it.
Right. Right. know? Exactly. Yeah, this is, you know, all the papers that Jackie Cooper goes through in the first Superman movie. This sounds like something they come up with. Not, you know, look, Ma, it flies. No wires,
Doesn't Ned Beatty play a rival Metropolis newspaper guy in that Lorne Michaels special? And he's like, "Sure, we don't have the Superman stories, but we have Garfield." It's actually, I don't know why that sticks in my brain, but I think I just found it really funny.
It's not Ned Beatty, but it's the guy, who's the guy that played Wimpy in the Popeye movie? Oh, I can't think. You know what I'm talking about.
Okay. That's who it is.
It's that guy. Yeah, he looks a lot, him and Ned Beatty look a lot
alike. I know who it is. It's Paul Dooley.
Paul Dooley, yes.
Paul Dooley, yeah.
But,
He probably knew Ned Beatty.
Right.
they should be friends.
Yeah. Yeah, Superman gives him a speech when he joined the team. He became more than just a hero. He became a symbol that represents the whole team. And I love this. He says, "We don't play favorites. We don't sell deodorant on television." And you see the Flash, like, kind of covering his face. Like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was my favorite line out of the episode.
Yeah.
Was that one. Yeah. Because, because this show is so established now, it can just have fun and tell stories in its own continuity.
Yeah.
Because I think that was actually addressed in an episode of Justice League.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And and it's just like, that's what I was like, that's what you're kind of hoping for, is that familiarity of the characters, like, it can be exactly like the comics, you know, where they have a backstory to draw upon.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Flash was especially selling the light speed nutrition bars, which, in the, I think it was the, episode of The Brave and the Bold. I think that's the one that it was. But yeah, that's always coming back to haunt him, which I think is a fun bit. Yeah, and you know, Superman says we don't get involved in politics, and we certainly don't endorse supervillains for the presidency. So, of course, Captain Marvel brings up he didn't endorse him, which, yeah, Superman needs to, like, Clark Kent needs to walk into the Daily Planet offices and have a talk with Lois and Perry about this, I think. Chew them out, not poor Captain Marvel. Come on.
Yeah. What are you writing this tripe for, Lois?
Yeah, exactly. Cap gets mad and slams the table, saying, you know, maybe it is that simple, because, you know, he says, you know, Luthor's a good guy now, and Superman says, it's just not that simple. You know, maybe people can change, he says, and the League just gives him, like, this stare down, which, you know, it's, what a tough crowd, you know, tough room.
I mean, I'm sorry, but Hawk Girl's sitting at that table. Hello?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that comes up later, but yeah, just the hypocrisy of Hawk Girl sitting there. It's like, didn't you, like, try to overthrow the planet? You know, just...
Even worse is they then start to yell at Elongated Man for not cleaning the microwave.
Yeah. Right. It's right.
We expected more of you.
Damn it, Ralph. When you join this team, you know.
Yeah. Of course, you're supposed to use a splash guard.
That's right. Put a paper towel over top of it, for God's sake. Superman tells him he's not to make any more public statements without running them past the League first. And this is the first thing in this episode that calls into question how much the League is compromising their morals and their freedoms, which is a big theme in this in this season. But what do you guys think? Was the League right to call him out on this? Should Superman be this angry with him? What do you think, Cindy?
The whole fact of him being called in with all seven founding members, no. Yes, talk to him, say, hey, going forward, this is how you need to do this. There was no reason to call him in there against all of those people. That's bull manure.
Yeah, the Kryptonian council that's going to go guilty. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I totally agree with Cindy. I think that this is throwing the book at him for something that Superman could have easily taken this guy under his wing and, you know, sat him down and said, hey, don't do that, you know, and it's wrong-footed and wrong-headed in every way, and it feels like it's motivated from a bad place.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. We then get the return of Lex Luthor, as always voiced by the wonderful Clancy Brown. This is actually the first time we've seen Lex speak in this season since we saw he was running for president in Doomsday Sanction. Lex is being interviewed on a political talk show, The Obannon Agenda, but he's there to talk about his new project, Lexor City, a fully functional urban paradise built for low-income Americans in search for that second chance that you were just talking about. So, Obannon says there are people watching this, rolling their eyes, saying Lex can't be trusted, and we see that Superman's watching this, and we know what he's thinking, and he kind of sits up on the couch when O'Bannon says that, kind of like, I thought that was a nice touch. and Lex brings up Hawk Girl, you know, so people can change, take Hawk Girl, for instance, and he talks about, you know, she betrayed the League and initially helped the Thanagarians, but the League took her back, and I'm really glad that at least Lex brought that up.
Right.
You know, it's like the hypocrisy of this. You know, Captain Marvel standing there, and Lex points out, according to Captain Marvel, the League is giving him the same chance, and Superman cuts him a look, man.
Yeah.
Ooh, just... Of course, Lex invites Superman to come to Lexor City, and Captain Marvel thinks that's just great. And then Superman gives him and the TV another dirty look.
Yeah.
So. Superman, just this is not a good day for Superman. So.
I'm telling you.
No.
Later on, Batman and Superman are fighting the Cadre, the first villain super team that the Justice League Detroit took on in the 80s comics. And they're not even really that invested in fighting these guys. They're more interested in talking about Captain Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
And Batman tells him, you know, asks him, you were a little hard on the Boy Scout, don't you think? One, Batman is referring to someone else as the Boy Scout, and Batman thinks he was a bit harsh.
Yeah.
This is Batman. Yeah.
Listen, who's saying that? First of all, I want to point out that I had to look up the cadre.
Oh, okay.
What they were on, because I'd never heard of them.
Okay.
And now I wish I hadn't, because they're really silly. Yeah. But that's coming from Batman, and doesn't Batman say something along the line of, I think it's his sunny disposition they all like?
Yeah, it's Superman's like, why are you guys always defending him? He's like, we like him. He's sunny.
Yeah.
That's so great coming from Batman, you know. It's just
what would be like the cherry on the sundae would be if like Captain Marvel has like in jokes that Superman doesn't get with the other leaguers. Like, that would be the insult to injury there.
Yeah, they're all laughing together, and Superman walks up, and they just stop laughing real quick.
Yeah, you wouldn't get it. You weren't there. Yeah.
But I think that's the whole problem that Superman has with Shazam, is that he sees him as being, like, at the start of Superman's career, when he was naive, when he was, you know, all this stuff hasn't happened to Shazam like it has to Superman, and he's taking it out on him.
That's part of it, I think.
Yeah, instead of mentoring him, he's picking on him.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's kind of because Superman says, you were a little hard. Batman says, you're a little hard on the Boy Scout. He says, I thought I was a Boy Scout. He said, I did too until I met
him. He's
jealous. Yeah, and Superman, this Superman's been through the ringer. Darkseid brainwashed him and turned him against the world. Mm-hmm. At the end of Superman the Animated Series. So, you know, this guy's been through some stuff, you know, this Superman. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's lost a little bit of that veneer of
naivete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hamilton, Professor Hamilton, who we know, but the Justice League doesn't know, is working with Cadmus, calls Superman and Batman to Star Labs, and 4 pounds of weapons-grade kryptonite has been stolen. And that did make me think of that 50th anniversary Superman special, Brian, where Peter Boyle is running the kryptonite shop. That's what it...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like that's where somebody took that. They took it to Peter Boyle to sell. Superman suspects Lex is involved because Batman says it was picked by LexCorp technology, the lock on the safe. Superman's like, you know, it was him. And Batman says he's not so entirely convinced. He says, I'm going to check with the Atom and see if there's anything I missed. And Superman says, since when do you miss anything? And then Batman zings him with, since when do you jump to conclusions without evidence? That's like, ooh.
Yeah, they're fighting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's
going to be a long, icy car ride home for the both of them.
That's right. So Superman does go to the charity event. Never trust Lex, you know, gives his little beginning of his little speech, and he tells the kids to run off and little scamps to run off and have fun. Don't ever trust an adult that calls kids little scamps.
No.
Yeah. Especially the voice of Mr. Krabs coming out of there.
Right. Not the Kurgan, but Mr. Krabs. So Lex, you know, really lays it on thick, talking about 30,000 people, the city will house, and he gets all emotional. And Lois looks at him like she's just about to barf.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is great. Superman says...
Because she's smart.
Yeah, she's smart. Yeah. And not taken in by him. Superman says he never knew he had such a sentimental streak. And Lex says, oh, there's so much about me you don't know, Superman. So, yeah, that's not loaded at all, Lex, you know. Okay, then Lex thanks Superman for putting aside her differences and supporting the event. Of course, Superman says anything for a good cause. Notice he doesn't endorse Lex himself. So I do like that Superman's like, okay, I'm not going to be a hypocrite about this. You know, I'm not here to support you. I'm here to support this event. And then Lex toasts to Superman, our hero. And man, he is laying it on thick.
Oh yeah.
I mean, just I mean, with icing, you know, just. then we see Mercy Graves, who was Lex's assistant on Superman the Animated Series, and we saw she was running LexCorp while he was in prison.
Right.
But into Bula Raza, which I just watched last night.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And she's voiced still by Lisa Edelston. She was also Billy's teacher earlier that we saw. And Superman overhears Mercy say that there's a device in place, T-minus 6 minutes. Lex says to make sure his escape route is secure.
The fact that he used the word escape route.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy who's like soaking up all this adulation. Why does he even need an escape route from like the public?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, this is clearly, they are really setting Superman up here.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess I could say, well, my escape route was just to get away from the press if Superman questioned him about it. So, yeah, but yeah. Superman uses X-ray vision to look around and sees what looks like a bomb far below the playground area. He orders everyone to clear out, and they all go except Lois initially. You know, he gives her every exclusive, you know, so, but.
Air quotes,
yeah. as another Lex would say. We saw Billy there earlier, and when he calls down, says Shazam, and calls down the thunder, it's right under a statue of Lex holding a kid's hand. Symbolism!
Which yeah.
I like that. That was nice. I forgot to mention earlier that Billy is voiced by the actor Shane Ashton Hubacha, who actually hasn't had a lot of IMDb credits in the last few years, so I don't know if he got out of acting or whatever, but he was also the voice of Robin in the Justice League The New Frontier movie. So,
oh, yeah, I liked that movie.
Oh, me too. Yeah, I love The New Frontier. Love the animated series and love the books. Darwin Cook, you know, just awesome. Superman starts tearing up the playground, but can he just drill into the ground Christopher Reeve style, you know? I mean, which he does later, you know.
Right.
So, yeah.
I mean, all right, everybody stand back. Nothing to worry about, you know, and just start drilling into the ground instead of panicking everybody or something. So Lex tries to get him to stop, but Superman at first shoves him away gently. And then Captain Marvel arrives and Lex says, "Thanks heavens you're here."
Oh, my.
My hero.
I mean, Clancy Brown is such a great actor that he can portray Lex being a bad actor, but not so bad that some people won't believe him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, he manages to get smarm. Which is a difficult quality when you can't see your face, you know?
Right. Yes.
And he does it really, really well. Yeah, he's and this is what a good Lex Luthor should do.
Yes.
Which is just, you know, he doesn't have powers, but he could sure get under Superman's skin.
Yes. Yes, he definitely does. And I love that Superman is arguing with Captain Marvel in the way he says, "You don't have X-ray vision, I do." If that isn't "My powers are better than yours," I don't know what is.
Right.
Yeah.
"Take your wisdom of Solomon and shove it, buddy. I've got X-ray vision."
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I hate it when mommy and daddy fight.
That's right. Lex says if you touch it, it could go off. And Superman says, "You admit you put a bomb under the city." And that's when Lex says, "It's not a bomb, but an experimental fusion engine," which to me still kind of sounds like it could be a bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely questionable.
The word fusion under a city doesn't sound real safe. No. That's just
you
me.
You know what? That sounds like a really good article that, you know, a journalist could write, you know, planting some doubt in people's minds of, you know, did he just put a bomb under the city? If only, you know, they knew some media types.
Right, exactly. Plus, Lex admits it's shielded with lead to protect Superman because it uses kryptonite. So, I mean, so that's the question, though. So, kryptonite was stolen from the vault.
Uh-huh.
So, if Lex is using stolen kryptonite to power this, that's a crime.
Exactly.
Yeah, unless he stole it from his own vault, I guess.
Right, I guess. I assume that was Star Labs. Maybe it was, because that's who Hamilton used to work for.
Right, yeah.
I'm guessing. I don't know. Superman shoves Lex out of the way, and he shoves him pretty hard this time. I mean, so it's like, I know it's Lex, but he is just a human. Right. So it's like, gee, Superman, you know. I mean, I know Christopher Reeve, like, shoved Gene Hackman down into the couch down in his lair, but, you know, he didn't shove him across the lawn like Superman did here. Captain Marvel tries to stop him, and he knocks him through the air and into the statue of Lex and the kid. Again, symbolism. Nice callback. Then that slobber knocker we've been waiting for begins. You know what's going to happen? When the heroes collide, and like all the glass shatters around. It's like when Superman fought Doomsday.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's which is kind of nice.
Which is what you really want if you're only going to get one appearance of Captain Marvel, and that is you want at least one good, you know, drag them out fight between the two of them.
And boy, do they deliver.
Yeah, for sure.
Because this is Zack Snyder level of destruction porn in this film.
Yeah, it's really, like, it's insane how much they really wanted to, you know, really give you the point that, you know, he's screwing up magnificently here.
Yeah. I mean, at least the buildings are all empty. We know that. But, you know, it's like, at what point should Superman stop worrying about hitting him again and just go try to defuse the bomb? I mean, I know they both have super speed, but still.
Right.
It's like, he's like, I'm going to teach you a lesson, then I'm going to get rid of the bomb, even though it's less than 6 minutes left on it.
Right.
Which I didn't time it, but I think this ran longer than 6 minutes. I could be wrong, but... Captain Marvel does crash into the Lena Luthor Hospital, which Lena was Lex's sister in the comics, so that's a nice little nod. Yeah, there's that one shot of Superman getting up in front of the safe, and that it looks like the same, like that early shot we got of Henry Cavill, like the first picture we got of Henry Cavill as Superman,
right?
For Man of Steel. Yeah.
Whenever I think of safes and Superman, I just go to the Viewmasters.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
The little cartoon one, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this fascinated the hell out of me, the little sets that they built.
Yeah, that's really cool, yeah. Then Captain Marvel pulls the trick that Alex Ross first used in Kingdom Come. He grabs Superman and says, Shazam, repeatedly, and he fries him with magic lightning. And as we know, Superman is susceptible to magic.
And electricity is evil.
Right.
Yeah. And boy, did the writers know that... I think the writers must have loved zapping Superman, because he gets shocked a lot.
Yes, he does. Yeah, and this time it's not a sewer grate that Deadshot rigged up. It's actual magic lightning. So.
Yeah.
Alex Ross got that bit from a thought balloon that Captain Marvel had in the Superman versus Shazam Treasury comic, but he didn't use it there, and it bugged Alex Ross for years, so he decided to use it in Kingdom Come, which I think is really cool.
Oh, yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah.
I had to mention
They were throwing away good ideas back then.
Right. We'll mention it here, but yeah. But we're not going to use it.
This will be stuff you'd talk about all your life, but we'll wait.
Yeah, that's right. We'll save it for that other next time they fight. Superman slips out of his grasp, grabs Captain Marvel, and the lightning hits him, and he changes him back into Billy. Superman doesn't seem too shocked by Captain Marvel being a boy. So what do you guys think he knew, Cindy?
I think that would be part of the vetting process before he joined the Justice League.
Okay, what about you, Brian?
I'm not sure if he knew his identity. I imagine that, you know, Cindy might be right. But also, he just may not be surprised because the character is magic.
That's true, too.
He is just hitting him with magic lightning. And yeah, it would have been nice to have some sort of... clarification there, I guess. If there's one dangling participle, it's like, did he know? Is this just, who knows? Yeah.
And if he did know, why didn't he treat him a little differently and not hold him to such a standard because he is just a young kid, you know?
Yeah. I'd like to think it was a surprise, but yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, because think about how they treated Supergirl.
Right, yeah.
But I just don't know.
Yeah. He gags Billy and then melts a contraption with his heat vision, and later the Atom's there, and he confirms it seems to be exactly what Luthor said it was. And it's kind of funny. This is John C. McGinley returning as the Atom for like one line of dialogue in this one episode in this season. And this is the last time John C. McGinley plays the Atom. So it's like
I'm wondering if it wasn't perhaps pre-taped.
Maybe.
Yeah.
He might have. Last time he was in season one, they had him go ahead and record this line, because I can't imagine him coming all the way across town to or wherever.
Going through LA traffic down to
You want me to say what?
Have the bell sound for one line and then leave. Yeah, it seems a little.
Yeah. Superman is legitimately sorry and apologizes as reporters swarm. Of course, you know, this looks awful for him. Lex says he should apologize for trying to make the Free Power a surprise. Superman offers that the League will pay, and he looks back at Batman, who nods. And I have to think that, you know, I think that's more of like, yeah, I agree, the Justice League will pay. It's like, you're going to cover this, right, Bruce? I mean, are you good for this?
Yeah, that would end a relationship with me pretty quickly if my friend expected me to pay for his boo-boos like that. But, right, yeah,
exactly. And I mean, I know Bruce Wayne's rich, but I mean, geez, you know, how rich is he? Come on.
Yeah, yeah. We were just joking about that the other night. It's like we were looking at the Watchtower, and it's like, first of all, it's like a gymnasium in space. Like, it's this massive building with no one in it. And you're like, he had this lying around, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Animated Morgan Freeman pulled it out of mothballs, you know?
Yeah. Something like that. This is our abandoned, off-world project.
Yeah, exactly. of course, Lex says, you know, this one's on me. He comes out smelling like a rose, and he's holding the head of that little kid from the statue that Captain Marvel crashed into, which I think's a nice touch. And then we get the great end scene where Captain Marvel calls a meeting with the founding members, the same people that raked him over the coals, and he lays it on him, man. Yeah, he tells him how he looked up to them, how he idolized them, particularly Superman. And he often asked himself, what would Superman do? Which is nice to bring in that Christ analogy. You know, what would Jesus do? What would Superman do?
Yeah.
And he says, now I know. Ooh.
Yeah. The one, like, it's a wonderful episode. It's a shame that we only get Captain Marvel once, and really he's being used as a sort of plot device.
Yeah.
More than anything, to show how, you know, the League is losing favor, and they're also kind of having some internal issues with Superman and Batman at odds over, you know, the Doomsday thing, sending him to the Phantom Zone. And so it's a wonderful story, and it's great that, you know, it's in there. But I do kind of wish that they could have won his trust again somehow.
Right.
You know, I don't know the ins and outs of the legality of this, but yeah, he just disappeared after that.
I think maybe they only had him, the availability to use him for one episode, maybe. I think that might be part of it. Yeah, there's always some weird legalities with Captain Marvel, and I know DC owns him outright now, but maybe at that time they didn't quite, or something, or his rights were somewhere else, possibly. I don't know. But
yeah, I'm beginning to think maybe, yeah, they had some sort of development going on somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's too bad. It really is. I know that there's been several attempts at an animated series.
Right, yeah.
But I, you know.
Yeah, it's a shame we didn't get it and didn't get more of him. Yeah, and it's, I mean, when he says you don't act like heroes anymore, I mean, that is such a
oh, yeah.
Oh man, that just, ooh, gosh. And coming from, it's kind of cool because it comes from, You know, this is a very adult, very gray storyline, and it's coming from a kid.
Yeah.
That's basically saying, you're not acting like superheroes. You know, you're acting, you know, you're conflicted. You don't seem to make any good decisions. You keep compromising your morals. Yeah, it's really well done. Yeah.
I totally agree. Yeah, it's a great, it definitely is great for the character.
Okay, let's jump into our superlatives here.
Power action feature.
So for power action feature, what was your favorite action moment, Cindy?
I didn't do my homework.
Okay. you don't have one?
A summer school starting tomorrow. This was not. Don't make me do homework.
Okay, I will jump in and say I honestly, you know, when I remember watching this the first time when he grabbed Superman and said Shazam and pulled the Kingdom Come trick. I'm like, oh yeah, that's awesome. That was mine.
Okay, yeah, that is actually the takeaway I had too. Was that's like that's something I've always wanted to see on the screen.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would totally agree with you on that. And I'm not just cribbing your notes.
Okay.
I'm going to go with that one, too.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. It is pretty cool. Yeah.
Rotating chairperson.
For rotating chairperson, who'd you have, Cindy?
Honestly, I think this is Shazam's. This is Shazam's episode. I mean, that's him. He comes to the realization he has his idol and then the idol no more by the end of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah,
he has the hero's journey here, and he should get employee of the month here because this is his only month.
Yeah, I see what you guys are saying. It's in the context of the storyline. We find out that Captain Marvel was really wrong, but he's not really wrong. I mean, it's like Superman's kind of right at the end of this season, but. The way it went about it was all wrong.
Right.
So
exactly.
I would probably say Captain Marvel too. Although if you want to, don't pick either one of them. Give it to Batman, I guess. Because
because at least Batman lets Superman off the hook a little bit and says something to the light of "We got played."
Yeah, you've been
so set up. He's aware that this is not. Totally Superman's fault. They were pulling his, they were tugging on his cape.
Yes.
So to speak.
Yes. Yeah.
Justice League communicator.
What about Justice League communicator, Cindy? Do you have a favorite line?
I mean, honestly, at the end, I mean, it's not even really a line, but Amanda Waller clicking glasses with Lex Luthor. She's at the heart of it.
The plan worked better than I'd hoped. All I wanted was for Superman to destroy the energy source. But battling Captain Marvel? Demolishing Lexor City while those media morons filmed every horrific moment? It was more than I ever could have hoped for. Everything's going according to plan. And we're just getting started.
That's true. Yeah, she didn't even speak. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. What about you, Brian?
I like the "we don't sell deodorant" line, just because it made me. It makes you laugh. It's a callback joke, and it's just nice that we've built this little universe.
When you joined this team, you became something more than just a hero.
I know that, sir, but
you became a symbol that represents all of us.
Yes, sir.
We don't play favorites. We don't sell deodorant on television, and we don't get involved in politics.
Yes, sir.
And we certainly don't endorse supervillains for the presidency.
Yeah, that's a cool line. I really like that. I'm going to go with the with Captain Marvel's scathing speech to the Justice League at the end. I think Jerry O'Connell really brings the disappointment with a dash of the wisdom of Solomon there. I think he does a great job with it. And it's really, I mean, it really brings home what this whole season's been coming to. So it's.
Yeah. Especially cause he's the kid in the room.
Yeah.
Telling them to be adults.
Yes.
And that's a special kind of comeuppance.
Yeah, you know? It is. Yeah.
Comic connections.
For comic connections, if you guys got some other ones, jump in, let me know. But I mean, you know, these, of course, the connections go back to the origins of Captain Marvel. And like we said, the legal battle with the DC that they waged against him. Captain Marvel and Superman first fought in Justice League of America number 137, December 1976, which is a really sucky fight. I mean, there's this huge, this cool cover, but the inside's insanely disappointing.
Wasn't that like three issues too? I bought those.
Yeah,
And I had to buy them off of like I think Steve Jeppy's Comic World in the 80s because I really wanted to read them and I couldn't find them around here.
Yeah,
and then when I got them, I was like, oh goody. It was a little the great cover. It's fun to see like Bullet Man and Bullet Girl, but I guess like DC assumed they could use those characters and didn't actually have any of the rights. Can't remember.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they used like them and Mr. Pinky and Mr. Scarlet and Pinky and
Ibis. And it's like you never saw half of them again in the DCU.
Right.
Yeah, but I think that that comic connection that resonates the most for me is Kingdom Come in this because you have Luther manipulating Captain Marvel to get at Superman.
Yes.
And again, you've got that fight that is very similar to the climax of Kingdom Come, and I hope I'm not spoiling that for anyone. But it felt different, but at the same part you could feel where they were giving you a bit of an homage.
Yeah, I agreed exactly. Yeah. And the Lex and Waller working together bit reminds me of that Superman-Batman Public Enemy storyline that Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness did, and they made the animated movie out of. So that was kind of a...
Oh, is that where they all, like, I'm sorry, I think I read that. It's like where everyone looks like they've been on a Stairmaster for months, right? Like
that's Ed McGuinness' style, yeah.
Massive legs.
Super thighs, yeah.
Yeah. Which, like, I mean, it makes more sense, I guess.
I guess.
But I found that really interesting, that stuff.
Electricity is evil.
For electricity is evil, I think we all know what, you know, it's got to be the Kingdom Come moment again, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's got to be that.
Sure, yeah. it's no manhole cover, but it's, you know.
So overall, what you guys think of this one, Brian?
Oh, this is one of my favorites. Yeah, it's over in like 10 seconds to me because it's got so much going for it. It's a good story. My only regret is we never got any more of them.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Cindy?
Oh, I mean, I liked it. Like I said, it's the whole journey of he's losing that veil of innocence. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like their handle on Captain Marvel. He's somewhat childlike, like you said, but he's not a goofball, which I think I enjoyed the Zachary Levi films, but I think they lean too heavily into that, especially the second one with his character. O'Connor.
Yeah, I think the second one is the juxtaposition is the kids getting older.
Yeah, exactly.
So as Levi may have wanted to, I mean, I kind of get still being a bit goofy because you are still just a kid, but I don't know. Yeah, he could have gone a little higher with his sensibilities.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, and like you said, Jerry O'Connell here was perfectly cast by Andrea Romano.
Yeah, he's sweet.
Yeah, he is.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like we said, it brought up a lot of the questions that, you know, we've been talking about this season. So it's a really strong episode, and it's really the Justice League's really at a low ebb here. It's going to get worse, but they're pretty low right now.
Yeah.
So Brian, thank you so much for stopping by.
This is a pleasure. Yeah.
It's always great to talk to you. I know you've got a ton of exciting projects you have going on right now. Tell us what you're working on right now.
Right now I'm finishing issue 10 of Toy Ventures. And I'm very happy to say that the thing that was holding the whole issue back, the main cover story, I'm finally happy with its flow. And I should be done the entire issue by midnight tonight for a review.
Oh, cool.
And then off to the printers, because it's a little late. You know, done is better than perfect, but sometimes you just want to wait because you got something really cool coming, like somebody's got a photo you don't have or a bit of information, and I'm certainly glad I stalled. You know, it's going to make for a better issue.
Nice. You know? And I know you've got a new action figure in the works.
Yes. Yeah, I collaborated with my pal Jason over at White Elephant Toys, and Jason, I don't think Jason does sleep, to be perfectly honest with you. He's always doing something.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, I joked with him about how he created a doll, and the body is rather curvaceous, and I said we should do a Tura Satana. And last year, who's the star of Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill, and a bunch of other cool cult movies, and one day I just called the people who hold the licensing, and they were awesome, and everything has been a joy, and we should be getting this figure by probably the end of the month, which is really exciting. This has been one of the better experiences I've had making toys. They've all been good, but they've all had a little bit of heartbreak or upset. When I got that final figure in the mail, like the first one that rolled off the production line, I was like, wow, I am so happy with this. I couldn't even find the words.
Yeah, it looks great. I love the video you did where she's driving the car. That's awesome.
that's me holding a Barbie car in front of a green screen, shaking it.
Well, there you go.
I had video of.
Yeah, I mean, the box by Joseph Michael Linzer. I mean, geez. I mean, the figure looks great. The packaging looks great. It's just, it's really sharp.
Like Jason had worked something out with Joseph, and I loved his work.
Yeah.
But I had something very specific in mind. I wanted to take a poke at the Mattel Big Jim Wolfpack packaging because I love it, and there's no female members of the pack, and I felt like making, Tura would definitely fit right in with those guys. And one conversation I knew. We were going to be great because he's a 70s kid and he loves toys.
Yeah.
And the minute I mentioned that, he went, I get it. And I never had to interfere again. He just delivered me, a beautiful piece of art. And it was exactly what we were looking for.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah. So everybody keep your eye out on PlattStallions.com. And Brian's got a great YouTube channel out there. I've gotten used to hearing you on my TV versus in my headphones because I watch YouTube on TV. So it's like, oh, you're in my headphones.
Yeah, me too. But my wife can. She's like, I can't watch you. I live with you, and it's like, yeah, that's. I don't want to hear my voice coming from another room either. Like that's fine. You know?
Well, thanks again for stopping by.
Oh, always a pleasure. I love this show. And I look forward to your next podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So special thanks to our Patreon supporters. For information on how you can support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, visit patreon.com/FW podcast.
When you become a patron, one of the perks is participating in polls at our Patreon page. We recently asked our patrons, who was your favorite Huntress? The results were 56% Helena Wayne, 44% Helena Bertinelli at the timing of this recording.
Mm.
So the Earth 2 Huntress won out.
What about Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah, we could have been her too. That's right. Yeah, well, she
two
was.
Two choices.
She was Bertinelli though, right? So, yeah. So, and then Helena Wayne was from the. I think she was Helena Kyle, but from the Birds of Prey TV series that. Hardly anyone remembers nowadays. Yeah.
Oh, I remember it.
I do too, but yeah.
Yeah.
I like Dina Mayer's Oracle. You know, that was cool.
I when she dressed up as Batgirl, even though she was using the outfit from, I think, Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
It was pitch perfect.
Yeah.
She looked fantastic.
She did. Yeah.
Yeah.
She did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Extra special thanks to Jorge Luis Castillo, Matt Ryan, Neil Whitney, Jeff Owens of the Classic Horrors Club podcast, David Capone, and Rocket Dan Johnson, who specifically support JLUcast. You guys can report to Lexor City for the big rebuild project. Mind the kryptonite fusion generator.
Yeah. Next time we solve a mystery in space with the vigilante stuck in the middle of Green Lantern's ex, Shiera, and current girlfriend, Vixen.
Ugh.
We'll have a special guest there to wrangle this story as well. See you then.
Bye.
So ends another adventure with the Mighty Marvel. You won't want to miss the next exciting adventure with star reporter Billy Batson, his sister Mary, their friend Freddie Freeman, lovable Uncle Dudley, and that amazing talking tiger, Mr. Tawny.
JLU Cast is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises worldwide and is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright their respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders, and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue Mommy and Daddy. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for JLUcast and FW Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter by using the hashtag FWPodcast. Please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to JLUcast.
Look, Captain, I want to... No more lectures. I called this meeting and I'm going to have my say. But my whole life I've looked up to the League. You are my heroes, every one of you. And you, you were more than a hero. I idolized you. I wanted to be you. Whenever I was out there facing down the bad guys, I think, what would Superman do? Now I know. I believe in fair play. I believe in taking people at their word and giving them the benefit of the doubt. Back home, I've come up against my share of pretty nasty bad guys, but I never had to act the way they did to win a fight. I always found another way. I guess I'm saying I like being a hero, a symbol. And that's why I'm quitting the Justice League. You don't act like heroes anymore.